Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens. In this podcast, I ask my guest to choose the five things from their life that they would like to put in a time capsule, four things they wish to preserve, and one they'd like to bury and never have to think about again. My guest in this episode is the actress Natasha McElhone. Natasha has starred in over 20 major movies, including Surviving Picasso, The Truman Show, The Devil's Own, Ladies in Lavender, Ronin, and Solaris. On television, she was in Californication. She played the First Lady to Kiefer Sutherland's president in Designated Survivor, is in The First, a drama about the first human mission to Mars, and the upcoming drama Halo. On stage, she has appeared in The West End in Fatal Attraction and played Sarah Churchill in Queen Anne of the RSC, which I was also in. Not that you'd have noticed. Natasha has done all this whilst bringing up three sons on her own after the sudden death of her husband, Martin, in 2008. So, finally, after working with, the likes of Anthony Hopkins, Viola Davis, Harrison Ford, Jim Carrey, Geraldine McEwan, Brad Pitt, Heather Graham, William Hurt, Judi Dench, Kenneth Branagh, Maggie Smith, George Clooney, Christian Bale, Frances McDormand, and the two Shawns, Penn and Bean, a rather unimpressive career has reached its zenith with an episode of My Time Capsule. Yeah, I know I'm delusional. Anyway, I hope you enjoy listening to Natasha as much as I enjoyed talking to her.
I started thinking about it properly last night, and I had a kind of dilemma because I thought, well, I want to be a responsible ancestor. So in the sense that an archaeologist, they have a dig and you hear these stories how they found a Roman brick with the workman's handprint on it. And, yeah. You know, they held it and they had this extraordinary experience or connection to something from another era. And yet the continuum that they both have hands still, I suppose. But I was kind of thinking, okay, so what would I leave where I could assure that the next person would have some understanding of where we are now? And of course, you then get into, well, do I get a flash drive with a sort of, you know, a terabyte of space and put all the, you know, you do this sort of Carl Sagan golden record thing and you
send it to Mars.
You put everything you can imagine. Yeah, everything you can imagine. Or you bury it in the earth. And then you start to think, well, perhaps people won't be reading anymore. I sort of had this thought that perhaps everything, whereas language will still be understood. And then I got into a thing of, well, no, language is so limiting. That's all we have to communicate with. And actually, by then, there'll be cyborgs and, you know, AI. And those are our, we'll have mind children. We won't have sort of genetic children anymore.
Oh, so God.
I got into a whole sort of quandary around what responsible ancestry would look like and what would be the most useful thing to put in it.
I'm so sorry I sent you down that road.
No, I loved it.
Oh,
I find all that fascinating because I don't think we're going to be as we are for very much longer. The role that I was playing that I just sort of left as this AI professor.
Right.
So it led me down all these interesting pathways.
Mm.
It just led me to think of where we are now as such a tiny transitory moment in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
And so suddenly it felt quite small to sort of put my favorite piece of music or something that was sentimental to me. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you
mean.
It
felt irresponsible somehow, but I'm very happy to go to that place as well.
Yeah.
But it just, it was what I loved about the prompt, if you like, your suggestion of a time capsule was it just led me to think about the insignificance of my own tiny little life.
Well, in a way, that is what this is about. It is that these things are insignificant. Anybody else looking at them would regard them as being completely unimportant.
Yeah.
But they are important to you.
Yeah. So having done my disclaimer, my sort of caveat that I do understand I'm not being a very good ancestor by leaving these tiny few things. So I was thinking about music.
Yeah.
And trying to sort of, because I'm assuming I can't have something that has massive storage in the box that has everything in it. So I'm going to be disciplined. It's sort of Desert Island Disc thing of just one.
If you like, I can put the Halle Orchestra in there.
Yeah.
It's that sort of, it's a figurative thing, I'm afraid. I'm not going to be sending one round by UPS. Let's imagine it's any size you want.
Well, so I went from the sort of macro to the micro, just thinking about all the music that I love and looking at playlists. And I thought, okay, so what song or what piece of music sort of distills all of that, has all of that, if it's possible? I was trying to sort of be disciplined and just think of one thing.
That's tough.
Really tough, but I think I came up with it. Ooh. So I'm quite excited about this. Now, it's not something that I listen to all the time. It's not something that's on, you know, numerous playlists, and it's definitely not my era. It's not my generation particularly.
Yeah.
I think it's even, you know, before my mum. But it's Benny Goodman's orchestra playing Sing, Sing, Sing. Do you know that?
Sing, sing, sing. Yeah, I think I do.
It's just the most incredible big band song. It starts, I mean, I want to play it for you. I won't, because obviously it will crash in from my Spotify or something. But it's the first part is sort of, let's just say the person, it wasn't a cyborg, it was a human who found all of this. And there'd been some awful sort of apocalypse and they just had nothing. And I thought, well, this piece of music gets you started, so it sort of gets you out of bed. You feel like dancing. There's a whole sort of sensual part in the second half that's quite sort of soporific and sort of like by a fire, sort of campfire, kind of almost sexy, dreamy, hypnotic. And then there's sort of, it's almost like the parts of it that are some of the drums throughout it are sort of like, or the clarinet, they're sort of like elephants. And so you'd have sort of safari, that you'd have all of Earth's experiences in this piece of music, drums and horns. And it's like there's a kids' games element to it, you know, where the instruments sort of talk to one another and egg one another on, sort of catch me if you can kind of improv little sequences in it. And it's playful and it's almost military sometimes. There's a kind of, you know, military marching element to part of it. Anyway, I just think it's the most sensational piece of music. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And people have riffed on it, you know, afterwards. And I'm sure it could be the soundtrack to, in fact, I think it was the soundtrack to, invariably Woody Allen used all this music. He used loads of jazz in his movies, didn't he? But if not his, then other people's.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it, because I think almost certainly at this point, everybody's stopped listening to us and is now on Spotify.
I hope so.
So in fact, we could just sit back and relax for a bit.
Perfect. Okay.
They go away, they click onto Spotify, and then hopefully they come back to us. So we'll say, welcome back. How did you like the music?
How did you like that piece of all-encompassing music?
Benny Goodman.
Yeah, Benny Goodman's orchestra. Sing, sing, sing.
So you're saying that's before your mum's time?
Well, I'm trying to think, actually. When was that? Yeah, because it was Benny Goodman, 1930s. Have I got that completely
wrong?
Yeah,
30s and 40s, I think.
Yeah.
The war.
Yeah, so yeah. But maybe it was something that she inherited, because I remember her playing it. She was really into jazz. And the other thing was, it kind of, there's a nice through line in terms of kind of, I don't know, lineage or not lineage in any grand way, but I just mean in the basic passing on of one generation to another, that my mom and my dad met through jazz, and my little boy plays jazz trumpet and piano. He's obsessed with jazz.
Brilliant.
And very weirdly, his middle name, as you know, my husband died when I was pregnant with my little boy. And my husband was a jazz fanatic. And his hero was, he had a few, but Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Pharoah Sanders, all these people. And I remember thinking, I have to pick a name for him, either his first or his middle. But I didn't want him to sort of have to lug around some legacy of, you know, some jazz giant. but I thought, well, let's do it for his middle name. In fact, the boys, my older two sons, kind of also chose the name. So we decided his middle name would be Coltrane.
Coltrane, brilliant.
So that's his middle name.
It often is the case, isn't it, that people love a piece of music that is really not their time.
Yeah,
you know, it's passed, as you say, passed through the generations. I'm very fond, strangely, of Al Jolson music because my father loved it so much.
Huh.
So, you know, every time I hear it, I find it really evocative. It means an enormous amount to me. And I find it very moving. But I would know nothing about that music apart from my dad insisting on singing it at every opportunity.
And also, you wouldn't necessarily listen to it all the time.
No.
That's what I was sort of thinking, is this kind of not very authentic? Because I don't put that on all the time. But then I thought, well, no, that's possibly why, because it's so distracting.
Yeah.
It's so sort of all-consuming when you do listen. And the other thing about it, because I was thinking about my mum's music, she really loves music, and she's Irish, and so I was sort of made to do Irish dancing when I was little, and before it was cool, by the way. Well, actually, I don't know if river dance is cool, but anyway, before river dance.
Is the Macalone, is that her name?
Yeah, exactly.
Ah.
Yeah. And so one of the instruments that I love so much is the baron, the Irish drum. There's something so exciting about that instrument, but it's, you know, very much, you listen to a lot of chieftains and all that kind of traditional Irish music with as well as baron in it. And sometimes if you're dancing, you know, if you were listening to the music that we had to dance to, that would always sort of really get me going when I listened to that instrument. And the Benny Goodman, the sing, 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 it's like that, you know, it's that kind of heartbeat, that kind of racing, excitement, thrill, I don't know, Jeopardy or something. Mm. And so, that's all, it's all in that song. It's all in there.
Do you feel that Irish influence in your life?
I think when I was little, I was quite conflicted about it because my parents were very Republican and quite political.
Mm.
And I remember when I was tiny, I think it's almost sort of right in my first year of school, the Jubilee, the Silver Jubilee, whatever it was, 77.
Yeah.
And I remember we had to go to school, but I had some instruction to kind of make a sort of red, white and blue flag or something to wave.
Mm.
And of course, my mother refused to do it. So it was just the most humiliating thing. She said to me something like, "You'll jig on the spot. That's what you'll do when the music starts."
And keep your arms by your side.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, there was always this sort of conflict of interest. But my goodness, very mild compared to a lot of people's. Well, that's the music sorted.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Well, let's put Benny Goodman, Sing, Sing, Sing. I'm going to put that into the time capsule, and that'll be, I'm going to put the whole orchestra in there.
Yeah.
They're all in there playing away. They're tuning up, waiting for somebody to open it up, and the music will burst forth.
Excellent. Mm. Oh, my God, that would be incredible. would be incredible for someone to find. Yeah, that has to be the first thing that's found.
Brilliant.
And then the second thing I was thinking, so with the ancestry thing in mind, being a responsible ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think I would love to find this, if you see what I mean. So thinking of it from both sides, the sort of Svalbard, the seeds, some seeds.
Seeds.
That idea of if the world was incinerated, there would be these seeds that you'd find wherever they are. kept in Svalbard, I think. Each country is given some seeds.
The seed bank, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lovely idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. So I think my little seed bank, it actually wouldn't be anything. I mean, intuitively, again, being really selfish and irresponsible, it wouldn't be for food at all. I've seemed to have that sorted out. And if they are cyborgs, they don't really need that kind of nutrition. So and maybe they wouldn't have senses either, but I think they would. I think even if they don't have noses, they will be able to, their brains will be able to process, won't they? They're sort of,
yeah, analyze what a smell is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. It'll be fine. So I thought seeds of, I was thinking, you know, those, they don't always flower, but you know, magnolia trees.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
Those flowers, you put one in a house and the entire house smells of lemon. It's like a blast of sunlight and it's the most incredible smell. And it lasts for a few days. So I sort of thought, seeds for a grandiflora magnolia, or maybe a rose bush, or at the moment, particularly as night falls, I'm noticing if I go for a walk, I'll get blasts of jasmine and honeysuckle,
yes.
You know,
yes.
And those smells, they can just be mood altering.
Mm. Overwhelming.
Yeah.
My garden at the moment is exactly that.
Right.
Halfway down my garden, there's an enormous honeysuckle growing through a tree.
Oh.
Oh, it makes you almost fall over, the smell.
Exactly.
And then at the end of the garden, by my greenhouse, I have a lot of jasmine. So it's, again, it's an incredibly powerful smell.
I love those smells. And they're so sort of reminiscent of evenings, or I don't know what my association is, because actually evenings are nuts for me. But you know, there was a time when it would be about sort of sitting and chatting and kind of, I don't know. So I would definitely put some seeds.
Lovely. We always imagine, don't we, that actually summer is about sitting around a table outside with wonderful smells, drinking wine and talking with people.
Even if you've only done it twice.
I know.
In the whole summer. Yeah.
It's why people buy barbecues, even though they probably hardly ever use them.
Yeah.
Well, there is nothing nicer.
But it leaves an imprint. That's really what we're after, isn't it? The things that have been impactful and sort of mood altering, and actually the impact is quite swift. It's not something that you have to practice or form a habit around.
No, it's fairly straightforward, isn't it?
Mm.
I remember the first time that I sort of discovered those things. As a young man, we never went abroad. Did you travel much?
Well, because my parents were divorced, the massive advantage of that was that my dad would obviously feel guilty and so take us away to Spain on holiday. It was a treat. Yeah. We used to go away with him once a year or whatever. Yeah.
I didn't experience that until I was, late teens when I went on my own. And I just found it life-changing, really, because I thought, well, this is the world outside. This is what it's like. It's not like sitting on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
This is completely different. This heat, these smells, this food, and these cigarettes. That's the thing I particularly remember, sadly. Lovely. We'll put those seeds in there, and that'll teach them the value of time as well, because they'll have to grow them and watch that thing grow to maturity before they get the full effect of it.
Yes, you're right. By that time, there'll be labs which expedite the whole process, and you don't even need earth.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so. If we're growing beef, then...
of course. Oh, well... Poor people, never mind. But I don't know, maybe it'll be better.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think it'll be much better. I think, the Nova Scene, I think it's called.
Is that where everything changes? The whole political system, the whole economic system, everything changes?
Mm. I do believe that for the first time, we'll be sharing the planet with an intelligence that is more sophisticated than us.
Oh.
That obviously we will have helped make, but I think... there'll be AI.
And then it will become so obvious that what this thing is telling us is true that we'll just automatically follow it.
Hmm.
Oh.
And they will be able to see outcomes in a way that we can't.
Hmm.
And they will be able to mitigate against sort of war and conflict and find resolution in a way that we're unable to. I suppose I think we've already sort of uploaded our personalities and preferences to a power that is much greater than us, and quite willingly, without being asked for permission, we do it all day, every day. So the idea that we're going to stop AI from being our leader one day, I think, yeah, I mean, without question.
We're creating our own God.
Yes, but unlike other sort of deification, it's not going to be imagined. It's going to be very real. I also think that there's a sort of, I don't know, there's some whole theory around the, you know, the bit, the basic sort of unit of information of zeros or ones, or, you know, the way in which computers originally worked, that you can construct these whole worlds from this very, very simple binary. And there's an idea that that information may indeed be the basis of the cosmos. So in fact, there is a system out there that we just haven't managed, because our intelligence is quite limited.
Yes.
We haven't managed to hear yet, if you like. Our idea that all life is sort of carbon-based is probably wrong, that there are probably all sorts of other sources which we just don't really have the capacity to understand. But there are other codes, so not just sort of RNA and DNA, but there's life forms that are written in other codes that are based on digital electronic instructions that, you know, we will one day, with the help of AI, invent and then, I think, tap into something that's completely different than we have now and is, you know, connected to the rest of the cosmos. It's not just this sort of, as I said, this sort of little anthropomorphic kind of Earth-based existence. I don't know.
No. In the meantime, I'm going to rely entirely on DNA and RNA and put my faith in your seeds.
Well, that's why I think the seeds might also be really interesting for future life.
They may say, what's this sort of life form?
See, exactly, exactly. And with that in mind, actually, with the sort of whole idea of kind of, you know, a genetic map and a code, that I was thinking around, okay, so in a sentimental way, I don't know if you did this and my mom did it with us, but you sort of keep your kids' milk teeth and little, you know, cuttings of flaxen hair from when they're toddlers and things, the first haircut, whatever it is. I've still got these sort of boxes with their DNA in. Obviously not doing it for that reason, but there's a sort of dovetailing of the two things. I think I would put, you know, one of those little boxes with a milk tooth and a bit of hair that could then be analysed.
They're tiny, aren't they? Absolutely tiny.
Yeah. They're like little pearls.
It's funny, isn't it, when children make that change from having the teeth of a baby and then these adult teeth come through and you look at your child and it's completely changed. You know that feeling?
Yeah. Yeah. Very well.
It's such an enormous demonstration of time whizzing by.
And also, I suppose, you know, seedling to fully grown thing that doesn't resemble the seed in any way, shape or form. I love those kind of mutations and transformations.
It's wonderful, isn't it, to watch?
I was thinking during this period, after sort of 3 months of only having looked at faces that I made, it would be really nice to look at another gene pool for a moment, to be honest. Yeah.
How old are your boys now?
20, 17 and 11.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. I can't believe I've actually got a 20-year-old, only because it feels so recent. You know, the 11 or the 7, it is a sort of long distance. I don't know whether our memories, whether we sort of cleave to, there's sort of increments of time where if it's, you know, childhood 10 years, it's like 100 years because it went so slowly. Whereas if it's sort of from 20 to 30 or 30 to 40, it feels very recent, very kind of tangible and visceral still, because I think that, you know, it gets faster and faster, doesn't it? Yeah, so I think the teeth and the hair. And there's a thing, I remember wanting to find out something to do with the issue of one of my kids. And there was sort of this idea that, you know, there may be a genetic component and, you know, obviously I could give blood tests and stuff, but my husband isn't here. And I was sort of thinking, God, why don't I have a bit of his hair or a tooth or a nail or something, because that's all they needed. And I didn't have it. I didn't have anything. So I think there's another kind of, there's a kind of like an urgency to sort of, I just think, I don't know, that could just be useful. Because what happens if it was a future relative of ours who found it, and then perhaps they could extract some information from, that's a long shot, obviously.
It's worth it, I think.
Or if humans had been wiped out altogether and someone felt like trying to kind of map or make a, I suppose, a clone in a lab or something. Maybe that would be enough for them to do it with.
And it would be your son.
And you can take your pick. They are all marvelous specimens of our species.
Yes. I think it's a really lovely thing to keep in there. And it's an interesting idea, isn't it? And we've lost that a bit, haven't we, of keeping those mementos.
Little keepsakes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very Victorian thing, that, isn't it? That they always had lockets with hair or, you know.
And in Ireland, those trees, these trees with, oh, it's awful, actually, when a little child has died or something, you sort of hang their toy or a bit of hair or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. On the roadside?
Yeah, they're just around the place, and it almost looks like they've been decorated, but obviously it's not decoration. It's like a little, not altar, what do you call them?
A little shrine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sad. I mean, I always find those just a bunch of flowers taped to a lamppost. Very sad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's something about the wishing tree that I remember when I was little, if we drove past one, I think, you know, there's sort of ribbons and bits. I don't even really particularly remember. This is very much a childhood memory. And I think there's sort of offerings to saints. There's a religious element to it.
Yeah.
I remember always sort of shuddering slightly. I don't know why. I guess it exists in every religion.
And Catholicism particularly, they have these sort of strange ideas, don't they? My mother was very keen on the idea of purgatory, which I never particularly liked the idea of, but somewhere where, you know, if you hadn't been so bad that you went instantly to hell, you sat in this place waiting to get into heaven. And if enough people prayed for you, then eventually you'd be given permission. And it's a really strange idea that you're sort of earning points. And then God says, okay, all right, you can come in. She really believed in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Lourdes. I remember my grandmother used to always go and come back with these phials of holy water. And
oh, yes, Lourdes. Large part of my youth as well. My mum was always going off to Lourdes.
Really?
Yeah, and then she'd bring back holy water that had been blessed by the Pope. You know, that was the greatest water to have.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to put the lovely little tin. Is it a little tin of milk tea?
Yeah, I think they're little sort of wooden box.
Little wooden box.
But I suppose they're biodegradable, so maybe we have to put
Oh, no, it's hermetically sealed. It's hermetically sealed. Yeah. You'll be perfectly safe in there. And anyway, if Benny Goodman's orchestra can survive, then these little boxes will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put those in with the milk tea and the strands of hair. Fabulous. So what's next? Where are you going to go now? We're going to take a short break here, possibly for some adverts. We'll be back very shortly.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back. Okay, let's find out what else Natasha McElone would like to put into her time capsule.
It was funny, actually, in a sense, I was thinking about the time capsules in my house. And I remember after my husband died, I had his desk and I moved into a room and my friend who was helping me said, you know, come on, empty the drawers, for God's sake. I said, no, don't touch the drawers. Of course, half of them were filled with junk, or the top two particularly, were sort of almost how a crime scene is left when there's a robbery or a death in a room and the police put tape around it. So you don't move any of the articles inside the room. The desk was a bit like that. And I kind of felt that I really wanted the boys to have that, to sort of have access to it. So when they opened a drawer, that wasn't something that had been reorganized or reinterpreted or filtered by me. No. That was him. That were the contents of a large part of his life, which was spent, you know, working and at his desk, or at least organizing for his operations. So you've got these fantastic notebooks, which he was an amazing illustrator, and he would draw a lot of his patients or his plans for for operations and so forth. There would be very artistic element to a lot of the note taking that he did, and some of it was obviously medical terminology, and there would sort of be notes for an abstract that he was writing or a talk that he might be doing, but they'd be littered with these fabulous little sketches. And then because he played music and he painted as well, there would be, you could tell the way his mind worked. It's very sort of, even though he could be very, very focused in his attention, unlike me, where if I get sidetracked by something, that will sort of be a full-on deviation from what it was that was the purpose in hand. What he seemed to be able to do was flit from a work idea to an idea for a music composition, to an idea for a painting, to an idea for a holiday that he might book. And a lot of it would just be illustrated. So there would be a sort of picture of a pineapple and a sort of a country next to it where he thought that we should explore. Or, a sort of turtle. And you could tell it was like maybe the Galapagos Islands that he was fantasizing about as he was mid-work in a dreary sort of dusty London office with the rain pattering outside. And that then that would carry on to carrying on about the sort of the rhinoplasty operation that he was about to do.
Wow.
So I just loved his sort of the way his mind worked. And I wanted them to be, to have access to that, to just be able to sort of drill right into that. And so this desk still exists. And I think the boys have, I let them, you know, when they were little, sort of ferret around in various drawers and stolen sort of paper clips or, an old mobile phone or something that was in there.
Yeah.
And tried to use it as a motherboard for some experiment that they were doing. But, so it's all quite chaotic, but we probably couldn't fit that in a time capsule.
Oh,
but again,
I'll make it big enough.
Would really? Okay. Yeah. Well, then I think that would be a fantastic article to
it,
put in.
It does
time
sound
capsule.
Absolutely fascinating. I love the idea of seeing how someone's brain works just from their notebook. I mean, absolutely. That I'm like you. If I change subject, the other one's gone. I've lost it. You know, I have no idea what I was doing before. So that thing of being able to think of four or five things at the same time while still giving each one the proper attention is amazing.
And even I remember one, I found this picture of a certain angle that you could go into a wave at that would ensure that, you know, you enjoyed whatever it's called. Is it the green tunnel? What is it?
Oh,
surfers
right.
Call the wave that
I'm not sure, but I know what you mean.
And he loved surfing. There was a sort of picture and a kind of, and it was obviously, I think it was a sort of Google search of how do I approach this without sort of flying off my ass the minute the wave catches me, or I don't even know what the surfing terminology is. But I remember there was this brilliant picture and all these sort of like little geographic kind of angles and arrows, and almost like a sort of maths equation. And so his approach to things, even surfing, was kind of meticulous. He used to make sushi as well. He used to roll sushi just perfectly. It would be, there were sort of works of art. So it's really what I loved about this desk and its contents was it was his sort of approach to life encapsulated in this little time capsule. And I could never relay that to them properly because obviously it's always through the sort of portal of my love and experience of him. But this seemed like a pure form, just unadulterated him.
Good Lord. How old was he when he died, your husband?
43, just turned 43.
That's
young,
but yeah. my word, God, he crammed a lot in, didn't he?
Oh my God. Five lives in one. Yeah, that's the one glorious thing. There was nothing he didn't try that he wanted to try. He was the opposite of, what's the opposite of a procrastinator? Is there a word for it? Someone who does things before they're even ready
An anti-crastinator.
A pre-crastinator, yeah.
Well, well done him, because I sit here at the end of, well, towards the end of my life, I'm aware of that, and I look back and I think, God, I've wasted a lot of time.
Yeah, again, I think our metabolic rates or the rate at which we do things, of course you can change and titrate it, but I also think remorse and regret towards oneself is such a futile energy.
Yeah, it's pointless. It is my life. That's it. And I didn't expect anything else. But I always find it extraordinary to come across other people who are so different from me. You know, I have friends like that. They're always organising holidays and they collect cars and they're fixing things and they're going places. And then they've also been down to the coast and they've got a boat and they varnish that. And then whilst chopping down a tree and at the same time they're reading, they're reading books. And they're, you know, you go, what? Are there five of you? How do you do this? Me, I cut the grass. That's a day done.
Well, that's the point. They probably have someone that they're employing to cut the grass, you see.
Probably.
That's what I always console myself with.
Yeah, bastards. brilliant. Okay, well, I wish I'd met your husband. It sounds an extraordinary man. But that desk is a wonderful thing to put in.
Can we cram it in?
Yeah, it's a treasure trove of just clues to his character, yeah. I think. So that even when you're not there to relate personal memory of him, people will be able to glean it from it.
Yeah, and I don't want them to have my version of him only. I mean, obviously, he's got four sisters and a mother who obviously have other very different versions of him to share, but there's something about his mind and colleagues who can throw light on, you know, his mischievous side and how playful he was and how witty. Yes.
It's funny that, isn't it? When I worked with the actor Anthony Quayle when I was a young man, who was a delightful man, a lovely man, just after he died, his wife, Dot, got in touch with me and said, would you come and have lunch with me? And I said, yeah, sure. And she said, well, I just want you to come and tell me about Tony and what he was like when I wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can understand it.
Well, I'm going to put that desk into the time capsule and that's in there, safe.
Yeah.
For future AI people to discover. Lovely. And yeah. So we need one final thing, but this is something in a way you want to discard from your life. And I have to say, I'm amazed it's not the really tragic death of your husband.
Well, I think we are entirely powerless, aren't we? And I think accepting and understanding that is the only way. And as you mentioned earlier on, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but you said something about expectation that your life was what you had expected or you expected nothing more or something like that. And I think that... you know, being expectant, and it's different to being sort of curious or wanting to explore, or that sort of energy, that forward moving energy or propulsion or whatever you want to call it. What I think is a good restlessness is an excitement about being alive. There's something around expectation or you know, thinking that you can control outcomes that I think is is our worst enemy, actually.
Mm.
So I think the thing that I would, and I don't know if we can do this, but I think it would be around procrastination.
Ah.
I've realized that I procrastinate. That's my worst enemy.
Mm.
It's not any outside force. There's no one to blame. There's no, it's entirely my own obstacle that I choose to put in the way of living every moment, I suppose.
Yeah.
So the problem with the procrastinating is you're definitely not in the present. I mean, you're just not in the present. You're sort of like a lot of us live, you know, in the past and the future.
Yeah.
I heard a sort of counter argument to procrastination that I thought was interesting, that of course, in this particular time, a bit like when you're pregnant or when you're a teenager, you know, below the level of consciousness, there's all this adjusting, there's all this sort of body preparing for an unanticipated world, if you like, that as humans, that's part of our survival mode.
Yeah.
We will be very, very busy bodily preparing for potential danger or hazard, and that this procrastination very often is our friend, the fact that we don't run into things and we're not too recklessly sort of spontaneous.
Yeah.
But that's definitely not my story. I can wait for a really long time. Yeah. So I think it would be great to shed, to get rid of, to leave that behind, to incinerate that.
And learn to enjoy the now.
That's the thing. It's not sort of an either or thing. Because without question, a lot of my life I have lived in the now. Without question, kids make you do that. And
yeah.
You sort of follow them and you follow their lead. And they are so engaged in the now.
Mm.
So it's more just, I think, this sort of inner critic, the voice that gets there before the impulse does.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That
yeah.
As a kid, you have an impulse and so you just do it.
Mm.
And then as an adult, the voice is there before the doing it.
Yes.
And it kind of wrecks everything. And I think it's a form of procrastination.
Yeah, no, I understand that completely. That, hang on a second. Hang on, yeah. Is that a good idea?
Or just, oh, listen, it's not worth it. It's not, you know, it's not going to be any good. It's not blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Just shut up. You know, let it be none of your business.
Yeah.
And someone else can judge and there can be an appraisal afterwards.
Yes.
You know, that's what outside critics are for. But when your own one is the loudest voice in your head, it's very restricting, I think.
And as you say, hindsight is a wonderful thing. So why not leave it to that?
Yeah.
Let that decide whether it was a good idea or not. Don't try foresight, as it were. Ignore that. We were always teaching children, aren't we, to wait for it.
Mm.
All the time we're teaching children the sense of in the future. And as you say, it's a wonderful skill to be able to be in the now.
I mean, I suppose the counter argument is that as foragers and planters and farmers and people who need to plan for seasons, then it's quite good. Sometimes we plan for the future.
I know, I'm being fanciful.
Yeah.
I'm being absolutely fanciful and, you know, wishing that the world were something that you could just rush through and just do it as it comes.
But there are moments for that, aren't there? I think particularly with creative endeavour, I suppose that's where it's allowed.
Yes.
It's just to, you know, put the pen to paper or get up and try something if you're in a rehearsal room, or shove some paint on the canvas. You can always paint over it.
Yes, that's very true artistically. We all admire those people we've worked with who are absolutely like that, who just don't hold back.
And also who don't stop. I have a musician friend who, he's composing at sort of 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no, he doesn't feel like going to make a cup of coffee in between. You know, I just notice most of us are people who, oh, do you know, I've got to get the kids lunch ready, I must do his homework before these things that actually we don't even like doing particularly, you know, the laborious things with kids that need to be done,
we'll
prioritize and put ahead of something that actually could be deeply rewarding.
Yes.
And the kid doesn't notice if you're not sitting there doing the homework with him or not. In fact, he's probably relieved that you're not. But the sort of you know, one can become very sort of duty bound. And I find I definitely as a parent I think with parenting today, particularly, there's a lot of virtue signaling that you want it to be seen that you've done absolutely everything you possibly can to give your kids a good start. You've done an opportunity hoarding, I think they call it, where, you know, you kind of create every single possible, and we'll do this and we'll do that, and I'll give him this, and I'll make sure that I listen to absolutely everything he says, and and be present for all of it. And actually, there's huge benefits to being ignored as a kid, and to being told, actually, you're not being very interesting. And I realize that I sort of thought I was being, you know, in inverted commas, good by doing that. And actually I look back and I think, and even now as I'm living it still, I think I'm using that as an excuse, a big old excuse not to get on with my own creative endeavors.
Yeah.
Which is slightly embarrassing and shaming. And I hope my kids never listen to this.
Then I won't procrastinate anymore, and I should put procrastination into the time capsule as your final item.
Yeah.
So there we are. That's it. So Brad Pitt, George Clooney, and me. You work with all three of us. Your work life must be complete, surely.
Pretty much.
It's been lovely talking to you.
Oh, thank you. Gorgeous talking to you as well. Well done for not procrastinating and doing this wonderful podcast.
Finally. You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Natasha McElone. You can subscribe to this podcast on Acast, Spotify, or iTunes, or the podcast provider of your own choosing to hear all other episodes and to receive each new episode. And if you have the time, we'd love it if you would rate us and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MyTCPod or at Fenton Stevens. This podcast was produced by John Fenton Stevens, and the music is by Pass the Peas Music. It was a cast-off production. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed it, then, well, why not tell your friends? You can stop strangers in the street and tell them if you want to. Be arrested. Bye for now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.